The Burrows of Berea is a conversational podcast.
We study the Bible and we talk about it.
Not all of us are of the same faith.
And one of us doesn't have a faith.
But we still love one another, and we're going to continue to talk about these things.
The things we believe in and the things we believe about what we read in the Bible. Not all of these are necessarily true. Some of it is opinion and speculation. Thank you for
listening and speculating with us.
There you go. That was good. Yes.
You are listening to the Burrows of Berea.
Welcome back to the Burrows of Berea. I am Rick Welch, and behind the glass is Rocket Man Andy Bishop.
Pacow.
Yeah, buddy. It's just me and you in the studio. That's not a song, but
I'm trying to think of one to back you up, but I just couldn't get it in time.
You could have just went, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Right? Then it's a song.
The end. Yeah, this is the rest of the Burrows have the night off, and it's just me and you in here in the studio having some discussions. And I'm glad. I'm glad we're getting a chance to just chill.
Yeah, these were fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Before I get into the topic tonight, I wanted to see if by proxy, Andy, if you've learned something from us. Let me ask you a question. Can you tell me what is the gospel?
The gospel, is it the words of, what is the words of Jesus Christ?
Yeah, but what is, so if someone says share the gospel with someone, what is the gospel? Do you know? Have you learned anything from us in regard to the gospel?
It's the good news about your salvation.
There you go. So good news. Gospel means good news. It was where the word Godspell comes from.
Okay.
Yeah, the good news is that Jesus Christ came to live a sinless life and to offer it as a ransom for many. And that's what he did, and that his death and his burial and resurrection was for you, was for human beings to be reconciled to God. And that was good news. You didn't have to follow the old customary laws, which was to slaughter a sheep or pigeons.
Yeah, you could keep your goats.
You could keep your goats, yep. Those days were over. He was the once and final sacrifice that pleased God completely and left the people that were to come after him by faith to be able to have eternal life. That's the gospel, right? So the other aspect of this, something that I wanted to talk about, which I have talked a lot about this in this podcast, but since it's just me and I'm sitting here talking with you, I want to talk about what the world would look like if we actually did what Jesus said.
All right, I'm in.
What the world would look like if we actually did what Jesus said. All right.
So yeah, break it out.
I'm going to break it out. Like you said earlier, in the previous podcast, actually, you said so eloquently that we're a religious podcast. Let's get out some Bibles. So, so let's listen to some of the things that Jesus says. He says, you have heard. Let's put it in an English version that I can understand. I mean, I understand.
Back to the ESV.
Yep, I understand the KJV just fine, but some people.
I prefer the ESV because I haven't often had time to mull over the verbiage in the KJV in the way that you kind of need to.
Yeah.
So my brain will bounce off things occasionally because I don't have the time to chew on their weird verbiage.
Right. Well, I read the KJV since I was a kid.
Sure.
And so obviously I've learned all of the nuances and how it works. And I prefer to quote it just because I know it so much better by heart. But when I read, I like to read from the ESV or the NASB. So this is the words of Jesus. He says, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council, and whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire.
Ouch. You fool.
I know it sounds so harsh, you know. Of course, I believe it's the fires of judgment that came upon Jerusalem of its time.
Uh-huh.
That's what I believe that it is. Some people would disagree with me, and that's fine if you want to. I believed in hellfire all of my life. I didn't stop believing it just because I didn't want to. I stopped believing it because I couldn't find it in the scriptures anymore. So again, let's think about this for just a second. He says, you've heard it been said to those of old, you shall not murder. Now we're talking about taking a life. So God says in his commandments, thou shalt not murder.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what Jesus says, he goes, okay, you've heard it of old, but I say. So he is making a distinction between him and that original commandment.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, whoever is angry, everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. And whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire. And then he goes on to explain about giving the gifts. He says, so if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are going with him to court, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the guard, and you be put in prison. Truly I say to you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny. So Jesus is amping it up a little bit, and we've talked about this, getting to the heart of the matter.
Yep.
So what would the world be like if we followed the words of Jesus? So let's see what he said. If you are angry against your brother, it is the same judgment as if you had murdered someone.
Yeah, that is a bit amped up. Wow. That is asking a lot, really. I mean, we're all, not all of us, but most of us are really trying to be good or better people, but to not be angry at some human occasionally is, I think, pretty high marks, man.
You know? So let's dissect this just a little bit, okay? So anger. Anger is, I'm not going to get out the dictionary here, but I think, we all have a pretty good understanding of anger. But the anger against your brother, what he's saying is that what causes the murder is the anger itself.
Yep, okay.
This is where it begins.
Okay.
So if you can manage the anger, you can prevent the murder, right?
Sure, yeah.
So he's telling you that rather than wrestling with yourself while you've got your pistol in your hand, or wrestling with yourself while you've got an axe or whatever it is that your implement of choice for murder.
Everybody has one.
That's right. We all do. If the wrestling should begin before you even get the weapon.
I mean, that's sage advice.
Implements of warfare are there for you. Implements of killing are there for you. However, it's what's going on inside of you. The anger is what you're actually dealing with. So Jesus is saying there are going to be consequences that come with your anger. It's going to lead you to the judgment if you allow the anger to get out of control.
Sure.
Anger in and of itself is not a sin. It's not. To be angry is to be natural. It's to be human. And Jesus doesn't say, don't be angry. He didn't say that. He said, whoever has anger against his brother, you know, will be in danger of the judgment. But then he goes on to tell you how to reconcile that. Go and reconcile that anger with your brother. So that's where the problem is.
Yeah.
If you don't go and try to resolve the issue.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
So what happens if you go to your brother and he doesn't want to reconcile with you?
I don't know.
Exactly.
Then you have to murder.
Jesus gets into that.
Sorry.
Exactly. Yeah, that's how some people would probably interpret that. All right, so let's move on a little bit. What would life be? What would the world be like if we actually did what Jesus said? So if we were willing to work with our anger, or those who accuse us or whatever it is, if we are willing to try and be reconciled with them, that should be the thing that the believer focuses on in his life. Mm-hmm. If you're going to trust in Christ and you're going to trust this Bible as the book, then let's talk about how that can be interjected into your personal world. This goes for the audience. This goes for me. It goes for you, anybody. When Jesus says, be reconciled to your brother, that means the things that have made you angry, you can talk about them, you can go to them, try to reconcile that issue. And a lot of times what I've discovered is that if you come in a humble manner, in most cases, you can resolve the problem. Right. Not always.
Absolutely. It is.
But your statistics go up. Sure. If you come in a humble way. If you want to try to live peaceably with your fellow man or with your brother or whomever, come to them humbly. Don't go there with, I was going to murder you, but instead.
Well, we've talked about the I versus you statements before.
Yes.
Yeah. Bring the I statements.
Uh-huh.
And not the you statements. Yeah. But you.
It's exactly right. Like, hey, you know, to walk up to somebody, you know, I've told this story many times about how my boss called me an MF-er and it just made me so mad, right. You know, and I went into my therapy session that afternoon, you know, and I was like, he was like, what's wrong with you? Tell me what happened today. And I told him, and I was like, my boss called me an MF-er. And he's like, well, are you an MF-er? And I was like, what? You know?
Yeah.
But he really helped me he dissected what my anger was about. And it was because I wanted to be respected, cared for, and to be able to provide for my family.
Sure,
and
he held that. You were in a super vulnerable place because you already felt terrible. And then he, you know, he doubled down on that for you.
Yeah,
you just weren't in a good place to hear that.
No.
Yeah.
Today, if somebody does that, I would, you know, if I feel vulnerable, whatever, and somebody calls me an MF-er, it doesn't affect me the same way that it used to because I've learned how to filter that information. I know that that's that person. That's not me. And they're saying it. And yes, whatever I've done has angered them or upset them, and that's warranted. Now, the language maybe not, but I don't have to be justified. I don't have to be justified in this moment. I just have to understand that they are angry and go ahead and let them be.
Yeah, and that's amazing when you can do it. It's difficult, but it's so good.
Yes.
If you can do it, oh, man, your life's just better.
It is. Your life's just better. And it's the easiest way to get to a peaceful solution. And we did get to the peaceful solution 24 hours later. But knowing what I know now, we could have got to it a lot sooner. And I also have enough understanding to know that maybe his anger will not dissipate today. Mm-hmm. But I will own whatever the fault it was of mine. I will acknowledge it regardless, you know, of the outcome. That's staying in the truth of the situation. And then if I get fired, I get fired. If I don't, then there's a chance for reconciliation whenever they cool down or whatever it might be. But to understand the other person doesn't have the same kind of coping skills that you do necessarily.
Right.
Give them the benefit of the doubt, which is what we call grace. We give these people grace.
Poor Kelly.
Yeah.
It just reminds me of Kelly. It just makes me think of Kelly.
I know.
I probably shouldn't be calling him out.
No, I mean, but Kelly listens to this podcast, and he knows we talked. You said poor Kelly. I mean, we've said that he's a great man. I mean, he's one. They offer their home every other week for a fellowship, and a bunch of us get together in their home every other week. Man, it's really cool that they do that. But he's mentioned to me, you know, in private conversation at times, and he's mentioned it on here. He has moments when his life just drives him nuts, you know. And I would not want to be a UPS driver anyway. That's hard. That's hard, hard work, man. They're carrying like 70-pound, 100-pound packages
and he up just,
stairs and getting cut off in traffic.
And he does not have maybe the temper for it.
Right. Yep. But he's very good at his job too, which is, you know, it's just bizarre. All right. So here we go. Sorry, Kelly. Didn't mean to call you out there. Love you, man. You know that.
Love you, Kelly.
I won't hug you, though, because he's not a hugger.
He's not a hugger. I'll see. Maybe that anchor would
if we could just get him to hug
in your arms.
All right. So what would the world be like if we live by Jesus' words? Let's see what he says here. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. That's a good rule. People do it. It happens.
Yep.
So what does Jesus say? But I say to you that everyone... Notice how he uses that everyone again? Mm-hmm. That everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart.
Another high bar.
It's another high bar, but what is he saying? What is he saying? All right, so adultery is...
The argument, I guess.
It's the same exact argument. It says, okay, so the situation in your heart, if I look at a woman, or in the same way, if a woman looks at a man and you are in a relationship that you already have, and you look upon them with lust, the problem is in your relationship now. Mm-hmm. It's already entered in because it's in your heart and it's come out. And some people are like, well, I'm always that way. Well, okay, well, that means that there's some things that you need to work on yourself. Right. Jesus, if we lived according to what Jesus said, if we all lived, if everyone did what Jesus says here, there would be no murder and there would be no adultery.
I wonder what he, what the specific definition of lust is in this context, because I mean, if you see a beautiful woman and you're attracted to women, whatever you think is beautiful, I mean, you'll just be like, man, she's pretty, or whatever you think to yourself. But that's
I don't think that's lust.
Okay, so that's where I was going. No, I guess that's not
That would be extreme lust, I think. You know, that would be an extreme case of like, if you say that's lust, that's very extreme. Lust, yeah. Adultery is actually intercourse with someone outside of your marriage.
Sure.
So the idea that lust is mental fornication in your heart. In other words, you're taking them to bed in your brain.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean? You're undressing them. You're looking at them. It would be the same way as like pornography. With pornography, you are viewing something. If you're in a married relationship, right, and you're viewing another woman's body in a sexual way and imagining yourself with them in a sexual way, you're committing adultery in your heart. That is creating issues in your relationship. This is why women have such a big problem with men that look at porn, because, I mean, I can't say this is true for all women. I know some women look at porn. I've heard this, some women that I know who have. But for the most part, I would say the majority of porn viewers are men.
Men, sure, sure.
And so the reason why a woman would get hurt, even though it's technically, you would think it's not hurting anyone. You're not actually going anywhere or doing anything to anybody. You're just viewing it. But see, that's the problem. The relationship is what matters.
Yeah.
And it's your dedication to your spouse that matters. And so your wife might look at you and say, why would you want to look at someone else? And then, you know, here comes the anger, which is, well, I don't get enough for this isn't the way, you know, there's always some argument of justifying what we do.
Sure. Yeah.
But Jesus, if we lived according to the way Jesus said, he goes, everyone who looks at a woman and lusts with her in her heart, lusts for her in his heart, has committed adultery already. So if all of us did what Jesus said, if we put these words into practice and learned how to accomplish it, there would be no murder and there would be no adultery.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of power in like looking at the chain of events and recognizing the stage where you have more options. You know, the early stage where you have more options.
At the core of these two things so far, what we've learned is that what I want matters more than what you want. What I want matters more than what you want. If I'm angry at you, it's because I want something.
Sure.
If I lust after you, it's because I want something. I matter more than you matter. And that's where it's at. So to sort of dig a little deeper, it's like saying, think of others highly and higher than yourself. Put those people on a pedestal, whether they deserve it or they don't. This is the way that you act if you were one of those that follow Christ. So if a person who is anger, you don't have to get the upper hand in the argument. There's a lot of people that want the upper hand. You don't have to have it.
Right. You know, you're not always rewarded for it other than the joy of having had the upper hand. You know what I mean? It's not like it pays your bills or something.
unless it's debating, and then it pays your bills.
Right. Yeah. If you're a professional debater.
Now, let's see if we can read the Bible literally here. Verse 30, it says in Matthew chapter 5, and if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. Can we do this literally? Well, obviously, we could.
I think the joke is maybe that it's not your hand, buddy.
Yeah.
It wasn't your hand. That was,
Exactly. So then, but Jesus goes on to say, for it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body go into hell. Again, hell, that word is Hades, which is the grave. Okay. So Jesus is saying, this is not literal. If it was literal, then none of us would have any hands. So we wouldn't. We'd all be walking around handless.
Yep.
So absolutely. The idea here is whatever it is that's in you that causes you to sin, you are to cut it off.
Yeah, get rid of that.
Get rid of
absolutely.
That. This is the work that we talk about as a believer. This is the work. This is where you are working on yourself. See, a lot of us think that we're not working on ourselves. We're waiting on God to do the work for us. That is not true. A disciple, by definition, is someone who performs a discipline of things. Jesus is a teacher. We are performing the discipline of the teachings that he gives us. So this is our work. So if it's anger, we've got to work on our anger. If it's lust, we've got to work on our lust. Yep. If we have something that causes us to sin, we have to work on whatever it is that causes us to sin and put it away.
That's good. I never drew the line just between discipline and disciple. Mm-hmm. That's great.
That's the point, right? So Jesus says, it was also said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of sexual immorality, makes her commit adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. So Jesus really hones in on the marriage idea here. He sees the marriage of a man and woman as a very, very holy thing. Jesus does.
Uh-huh.
He looks at marriage as something, it is the cornerstone of the family. It is the pillar of the family. It is the man and the wife are the ones who will produce the children. They will produce the family. They will become the grandparents and the great-grandparents. And this is where the bloodline, this is everything. The marriage is such a critical part of family. So he sees family as in the garden. It was man and woman, and that's it. That's one. They're one. It breaks the oneness of a family. I can tell you personally that I've watched my family through divorce and becoming an adulterer myself, that it broke up my family in ways that I could never repair. That is the truth.
This episode is brought to you by Carolina Cases. Whether in your home, auto, suitcase, or hotel, you can be assured that with Carolina Cases, you can protect what matters most. Carolina Cases are TSA approved, so you know that your items are secure in a shock and impact-proof hard case. These lightweight, durable cases come with pre-cut, protective, high-quality foam to fit your pistol by make and model, compact size or full size. They come in a universal configuration for multiple options. Carolina Cases are more than a pistol case. They are available in fully customizable foam to protect what matters. You can go to their website at www.carolinacases.net to see their designative, protective lid designs. Each is laser engraved to give you unmatched style at home or on the range. So to protect what matters most, visit www.carolinacases.net. That's www.carolinacases.net. Enter code Burrows, that's Burrows, at checkout to receive free shipping. That's right. Just enter Burrows at checkout and you'll receive free shipping.
If the world operated according to what Jesus taught, you would not have murder, you would not have lust, you would not have adultery, and you would have families that could hold themselves together. That's how far we are, and we're only three bits in. So he's really laying it out there, and he's telling you, your work, the discipline of the believer is to really work on you according to what I say in regard to this. If we do this, the world can be a better place. That's how I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
I believe that. Now, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also.
Yep.
And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. And give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. This is a wild life.
Yeah.
This is a wild life, man.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm curious what you think of that. I'm really interested to hear.
So in the Old Testament, an eye for an eye or tooth for a tooth. I walk up to you, I punch you in the face and your right tooth's out, guess what? They're going to hit me till my tooth comes out. That makes us even. Jesus says, if you're one of my disciples, it's not about becoming even. Mm-hmm. They're going to get the upper hand. Give them the upper hand. Give it to them. If they slap you on your right cheek, then turn to them your other one. Give them your left. Don't resist the evil that's coming at you. Give yourself to that in order to end it.
Yeah.
Now, it may not end. They might sit there and just beat the straight hell out of you. I don't know. But guess what? Even in that case, there is no retaliation. Oh, but you must defend yourself. Did you hear anything about defense in what Jesus just said?
No.
Okay. Now, this isn't everything in the Bible. This is just one section in the Sermon on the Mount. But what Jesus is saying is do not retaliate.
Yeah.
If you don't, guys, the discipline of the believer, this is the hardest life. This is a wild life. If someone comes up and tries to steal something from you, I'm walking down the street and somebody sees my overcoat and they jerk off my overcoat. Don't resist them. Let them have it.
I'm not making a terrible joke right now.
Why? Please do. You can always cut it.
If somebody wants to jerk off your overcoat, don't resist them. I mean, I don't know exactly where the joke lands.
But I see.
Just enough words in the right order to to sound funny, I guess.
Yep. Oh, boy, that was bad, but it was funny. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. So think about that for a minute. Imagine.
I'm trying to imagine where he's coming from.
All right, so here's the law. According to the Roman culture, if a Roman soldier came up to a Jew and he had a bunch of gear that he was carrying, and he says, carry my gear, mm-hmm. Jew. They had to, by law, carry it 1 mile, uh-huh. but they couldn't force them to go any further.
Yeah.
Only 1 mile. So what Jesus said was, go with them 2 miles. Mm-hmm. They're not forcing you now on that second mile, are they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. That's a way of taking power back.
Yeah. And it not only is it taking power back, but it's putting them above yourself. Mm-hmm. Some people are going to love being that person in the upper hand because sure. that's just their nature. Yep. But Jesus didn't tell you to worry about that, did he? He just told you to do it. So the idea of the believer is that the world that's outside of you are always going to have the upper hand on you, always.
Which I suppose would have been true for Jews in that time.
Especially right? in regard to Romans
yep.
or anybody else in power. Because who is he talking to? He was talking to fishermen. He was talking to day laborers, and sure. he was talking to, you know, women that didn't have any power or property or anything. They were just wives, or they were sisters, or whatever. They were just women. They were powerless in this society. So he's talking to women too. He's not just talking to men. He's basically saying, become subservient to the world that you're in. End the evil. Don't allow the evil to overtake you. You are going to allow this to happen. That's the power.
Yeah.
You allow it because right. now you're saying, I'm going to walk 2 miles with you. I'm going to give you my tunic and I'm going to give you my left cheek. What more do you want? I mean,
yeah.
eventually he will take you to death. Jesus is going to take you all the way to the death because he did. Let's not forget that. Jesus went all the way to the death and so did his followers. They went so far as to allow their lives to be taken. Everyone always had the upper hand. They did not fight back with swords. They did not burn down your villages.
Yep.
Their villages were burned down and they were, you know, killed by the sword. They didn't fight back with swords. So I love this. Give to the one who begs from you. Every time I see somebody on the side of the road that has one of those signs and I know that they're a panhandler,
yeah.
everybody that tells me, hey man, these guys are making a living. I've seen some of these guys. They're not making a living.
They're not making a living.
These guys are just trying to find a drink to help them get yeah. through it or the next whatever.
Yeah, that's a short-term goal, baby.
But did Jesus say anything about find out what it is they were going to use the money for?
No.
He didn't, did he?
Wildly, I'm more likely to give a beggar money if their sign is like, I need money for a beer, because I'm like, all right.
At least you're honest.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. But even if they're dishonest, even if it's for dishonest gain or honest gain or whatever it might be, or true need.
Yeah.
He says, if anyone begs of you, give it to them. Now, he doesn't give you any kind of stipulations. There are no stipulations. Well, if I gave to everybody that asked me, I would be broke. Well, you need to ask yourself, where does it all come from in the beginning anyway? See, that's what the believer has to understand, Andy. That's the difference. The believer believes that God is the supplier of everything that he has. Uh-huh. So if God is the true supplier and we truly have faith in God that he will supply, then when we give, we know that we're going to receive. Not like these people like Kenneth Copeland and all these people say, give me $10 and God will bless you a hundredfold. That is all garbage.
That is Jesus bad is investment saying, strategy.
It is a horrible investment strategy. It's like doing the lottery. You're never going to get anything back for it. But here's the thing. What Jesus will tell you is that all things come from above. What did he say about the birds? Look at the birds. They don't toil. They don't spin their clothing or anything. But yet God feeds them. They don't have to sow for their food. They just go pick it off the thing. God feeds them. And he says, how much more valuable are you than a bird to God? Well, obviously a lot, because he made you in his image. So he's saying, you, my image bearer, don't have to worry about those things. I'm going to provide for you. And that's where faith gets tested by a lot of people. Will he? Does he?
Yeah.
That's where the rubber meets the road for those who live by the faith. Those who live in faith will have to understand from the get-go that God is their provider, the end of story, or they'll never be able to live this life of faith, period. Whenever Jesus sent off he sent out disciples two by two, he told them, don't take an extra cloak, don't take an extra tunic, don't take any money. God was going to provide for them. And he did, according to the scriptures. They all went and they all came back and they talked about the things that God had done with them. But that's the point of faith, is that God is the provider of all. You have to be able to trust that. So for all the Calvinists out there that believe that God is totally sovereign, do you really believe that he's sovereign? So let's talk about defending your home real quick. And this is where a lot of people get upset with me.
Sure. I've seen it.
Yeah, I have too. But I want to say it very clearly to everybody. Listen, if you totally believe, and I say totally believe, that God is totally sovereign, then your days are numbered. You believe that you have an appointed time to die. You also know that he is in control of all things.
Right. If I see where this is going,
If someone comes at you, you have to understand that you've never been in control to start with.
Yeah, it's either your time or it isn't.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, and some people will say, will you defend your wife? Of course I will. I've already said that many times. Yes, of course. She is my one flesh. She's my wife. She is under my charge. I will absolutely defend my wife. I will not kill the person. If I can help it, I'm going to do my best and I will ask God for help. The end. But I'm not going to pull out a pistol and shoot these people in the head. I'm not going to do it. I know some people that will. I'm sorry. That does not fit in this. Okay. Now, the borrowing of you, that's a wild man. So you got a beggar, you see someone's begging of something, you give to them. Mm-hmm. But to borrow, he says, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. And I've had people come up and ask to borrow money before. In other areas of scripture, it says, and not to ask anything in return. In other words, if someone comes up and says, hey man, can I borrow $100? I hand them $100. The end.
Yeah, just like, maybe they'll give it back, but. Yeah.
I don't even think about
that. You're not concerned with that.
No. Do you know what I think about?
What do you think about?
God's going to give me that $100. The end.
I've never.
I'm not going to have to need that $100, or he already gave it to me for it to be able to be given.
Or, that's a good way to look at it.
So I've learned in my own Christian life, I'm operating as a conduit. I am a conduit. I've been given a business. I work very hard at my business. I put money away. I have it. If somebody needs something and they ask me, I give it. I don't question it. I talk to my wife about it, of course, and say, this person is asking me, I'm going to give. But I always let her know. But she doesn't tell me, no, you can't. She says, okay. I say, this is what the Lord wants from us to do, and this is what I'm going to do. It's the discipline that I've been given. It's what I'm doing. I'm at peace with that. I sleep like a baby. I don't worry about the $100. Yep. I don't worry about whatever it might be. They want to borrow my tractor. They want to borrow my truck. I've got a really nice truck, and I've had more people drive my truck more than me.
You've offered it to me more than once.
You're more than welcome to use my truck anytime. All you have to do is ask, because I can't refuse you. See how that works?
Ooh, now
there's
I
a hint
know.
To all the atheists. Just go ask the Christians for everything.
Just go ask Rick for his truck. It's got a big old truck too.
It is. Yeah, it's a Haas. It's a F-350, so it's got some serious power.
It'll do what you need it to
do. Yes, sir, it will. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemy and pray for those who persecute you. Okay, if we do what Jesus said, if we live in a world who followed what Jesus said, then those who practice the discipline of our faith will love our enemies and pray for those who persecute you. So we're getting persecuted. We're supposed to be talking to God about those who persecute you or persecute me on their behalf. We're going to God on their behalf.
Sure.
But not saying, strike them down.
Yeah, yeah.
Bring down the fire from heaven. What we're saying is, these people are persecuting God. They're persecuting us. They obviously don't understand your true law, which is that we're going to be subservient to everyone. We ask for your mercy on them. Because what did Jesus say on the cross when he was dying? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. We are to be the same. We're supposed to look at our world in the same way. If the world operated according to the words that Jesus said, people would love even their enemy, and the wars would stop.
Yeah, I feel like maybe, you know, I'm interpreting the text in my own way, which is how it works. But it feels like what he's saying in his way is try to understand their humanity and viewpoint, even if it's contrary to yours and you don't like it. If you can understand that, you know, they're humans and they have logic to what they do, then you can at least appreciate them for humans. I don't know. I'm doing a bad job.
No, you're not. You're exactly right. Do you remember how earlier I said that I would believe that I was a conduit, that if someone asked to borrow of me like money, that I would give them the money, that God would replace it because God is overall in my mind. The same with my life. You see, I believe that God gave me this life that I have and that it's appointed for some time to end. I don't know when. I don't know my day or hour, but he does. Mm-hmm. So in my life that was given to me because I follow him, even my life can become, you know, in the balances here. It can happen. Sure, Rick, that's easy to say. Wait till the gun's in your face. That's what they say, right?
Yeah, it is difficult, yeah.
So what do we say? Well, God, grant me the strength to be able to do the things that you say in my life. Mm-hmm. If the world operated according to the words of Jesus, there would be no adultery, there would be no murder, there would be no war.
Sure, yeah.
If a country was in need, we would give it to them. If a person was in need, we would give it to them. But God would replace, because we'd be doing what God said.
Right.
That's the idea. If you want to prove the existence of God to your fellow man, the atheist, if you would like to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, then do his words. Hmm. If you do his words and become a servant to them, then they most likely can see it. But until then, it's just words. It's just words. It must become your action. Action does, in fact, speak louder than word.
Yes, absolutely.
But the word from Jesus is what causes the action. He's the super causer. We're the ones who react to it and respond to it and do it. And then what happens is that word becomes manifest in reality. It's no longer just an idea. It becomes a thing that we do.
This episode is brought to you by Carolina Cases. Whether in your home, auto, suitcase, or hotel room, you can be assured that with Carolina Cases, you can protect what matters most. Carolina Cases are TSA approved, so you know your items are secured in a shock and impact-proof hard case. These lightweight, durable cases come with pre-cut, protective, high-quality foam to fit your pistols by make and model, compact size, or full size. They also come in a universal configuration for multiple options. Carolina cases are more than a pistol case. They are available in fully customizable foam to protect what matters. You can go to their website at www.carolinacases.net to see their designer protective lid designs. Each is laser engraved to give you unmatched style at home or on the range. So protect what matters most. Visit www.carolinacases.net. That's www.carolinacases.net. Enter code Burrows at checkout to receive free shipping. That's right. Just enter the code Burrows at checkout and you'll receive free shipping.
All right, so listen to this. And more words of Jesus. Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them. For then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven.
Oh, he's just saying it shouldn't be performative. It should be real.
That's right. But he says, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So like the performative. So, oh, look at me. I'm giving $100, everybody. Yeah, yeah. Look at what I'm doing. I'm doing it for God. Immediately the reward. What's the reward? From your Father in heaven. So what he's saying, if you take the reverse of that, is that if you practice your righteousness and you do it without trying to be seen, then you will have a reward from the Father. Now, what is that reward? I don't know. Yeah, you'll know.
He's talking about motivation, though.
Yes.
He's talking about motivation. Are you doing it because you're trying to look good, or are you doing it because you're trying to do good?
Exactly. So how about this?
I put that well.
You did. Do good. Do good. Instead of well. Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets.
Ah, so this is very specific too.
That they may be praised by others. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward.
It's like a birthday song. It's like you give, they blow a trumpet.
Yeah.
It's like you sing me the birthday song, you go to a restaurant, and you look around and everybody like, eh? Yeah, me?
It's me, the guy.
Yeah, it's for me.
That's right. So, but he says, when you give to the needy, this is specific. When you give to the needy, don't sound a trumpet. In other words, don't be like, hey, I'm giving to the poor. If you go to Graceland and you walk through Graceland, there's an entire hallway of every check that Elvis Presley ever wrote to a charitable organization.
Oh, really?
Yes. When you walk through that, it's like, oh, that's really neat. That's really cool. But it's also being very showy, isn't it?
Yeah, but he's dead.
But he's dead.
Yeah, I don't think that counts against him.
I don't think that he had a hallway full of checks when he was alive.
He's pretty ostentatious, so it's possible, but I feel like I would have heard about that.
I think everybody that loves Elvis hates me now. But the thing is, my point was, is that that's kind of the idea here.
Yeah.
Is that we're not going to put up some big plaque or all of the checks showing our canceled checks where we gave to all of these organizations. The idea is to give it in secret because your Father in heaven knows it. This is about a relationship between the God that you have faith in, and it's not about how other men perceive it. It's about your relationship.
I disagree a little bit.
Okay.
I don't think the idea is to give it in secret, I think, necessarily. I think the idea is to do so with a giving heart and not because you want social status from it.
True. That which would be the blowing of the trumpet.
Right.
Yeah. Forget the trumpet. Go give do the gifts, but forget the trumpet.
Right. Yeah. Do it because you're doing good.
Yes.
Because you want to do good. And that's why you should be doing good.
Yes. He says, but when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing.
That's interesting. So, okay. So take me through what you think that means.
I've wrestled with this one myself, and I think that what it means is that it is natural. Have you ever played, let's use sound engineering.
Okay.
You're a fantastic sound engineer.
So I've heard.
But you've been doing it for how long?
20 years.
Would you say that there are some things that are just second nature to you?
Yeah, sure.
Things that you don't think about anymore, you just do them?
Yeah, yeah.
Don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing. It's secondhand nature. It is who you are rather than what you do.
That's fun. That's fun. I didn't see that coming. That's fun.
Okay. So then he says, so that your giving may be in secret and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. So this is a really intimate relationship here. In other words, what he's saying is that the things that you do in your life, when you give to the needy, do so in a way that is, it's a cheerful giving heart, but it's a natural thing that you do now. It becomes a part of who you are. You just do it. You're not even aware of your left hand or right hand knowing what's up. You're just doing it. And because you have become this way, then your Father in heaven, the intimacy is that the Father in heaven sees this in you. And that's good enough. The rest of the world doesn't have to know. Only you and him. That's it.
Yep.
I've had those moments in my life.
Yep.
So now listen to this. And he says, and when you pray, you must not be like the hypocrites. For they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at the street corners.
Again,
that they may be seen by others. Yep. Truly, I say to you, they have received their reward. In other words, if they're out there putting on a show, when they get the people looking at them and applauding them or really liking it, that's the reward that they're going to get. But he says, but I say to you, they've received their reward. But when you pray, go into your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Again, the intimacy of the relationship between you and the Father. So Jesus is trying to guide you. He's trying to discipline you, showing you how to find an intimate relationship with God. That's what all of this is about. He's saying, if you have anger in your heart, don't go after it. Think about your Father.
Right.
When you have lust in your heart, don't go after it. Consider your Father. Whenever you have people that ask of you, just give to them because your Father gives to you. Mm. Whenever somebody goes to pray, don't do it for performance-based reasons. Make it a secret thing between you and your Father because he sees it. He knows you. This is an intimate relationship. If somebody begs of you, automatically give. If someone has to borrow, give. Always consider your Father in this. He wants you to be this way. And Jesus says, I'm trying to teach you that. Jesus lived this life. He wasn't being performative. He tried to shy away from the performative. There were moments whenever he couldn't get away from it because the crowds were there and he would heal people. But even then, he tried to shirk back a little bit, to shy back from it because he wanted people to see what the Father was doing for them, not what Jesus was doing. He's trying, it's the Spirit of God that's working through him that's manifesting.
That, verbally, that's always what he, absolutely. Mm-hmm. He was like, this is not me, this is the Father.
But not only that, anytime he performed these signs, whether it was a miracle, let's say a person had a withered hand, he says, always, your faith has made you whole. He never said, my faith made you whole.
Yeah.
He said, your faith did. In other words, because you believed in me, and because you believed in the Father, this gift has been given to you. This is a gift to you. Your faith, that gift that I've gave you, the gift of faith, this is a gift that's been given to you, and this is why you've been restored. So it's always about this intimate relation with him. Here's another one.
The gift of faith that popped up in the last episode.
Yep. And when you fast, do not look gloomy like the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces that their fasting may be seen by others. Performative.
Yeah.
Truly, I say to you, they have received their reward. So if you decide I'm going to fast and you're walking around like, oh, I'm so hungry because I'm fasting for the Lord.
Right, don't just complain the whole time.
Yeah. And it's like, all right, so, but what's the point of it, right? So, but when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face that your fasting may not be seen by others, but by your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Again, he's leading you to the intimacy. Every single aspect of the discipline of the believer is an intimate relationship with the Father. That's when they say, you need a relationship with Jesus. When people say that, this is what they mean by that. I love this one. Check this out. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures here on the earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves can break in and can steal it. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So again, Jesus, if you lived according to the principles of Jesus Christ in our world, we wouldn't be laying up for ourselves these mass amounts of treasures.
Dragon piles of gold.
Exactly. It's okay to be rich, they say. Of course it is. Fine, go be rich. but how hard it is for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. It's like the camel going through the eye of a needle. You know, he said well, then who can be saved? Jesus says, well, what is impossible with man is possible with God. So even a rich man can become saved. That's not the point.
Yeah.
The point is, he says here, don't lay up for yourselves treasures on the earth here. Like, let's not build up these masses of things. I've got the biggest house. I've got the nicest car. Yeah. I've got all of the things. This is not a sign of being close to God. So Kenneth Copeland and Jesse Duplantis and Swaggart and all of these men who tell you that whenever you give something, that you will be given riches and that you'll have these things. And you see people like Joel Osteen with these multi-million-dollar homes claiming to be Christian.
Huge.
And then whenever tragedy strikes, they don't even allow people to come into their church. Like, all of these things happen. They are laying up for themselves treasures here on the earth.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing. Does that mean I have to walk around poor all the time? No, he didn't say that. He just said not to lay up masses of treasures on the earth. But to do things, because why? Because moth and rust doth corrupt. When you die, you're not going to take it with you. We know this. Again, you're a conduit. God gives you what you need, but then also you can give to others when they need it. And that it's a continuous cycle. If you don't do it, if you don't believe in God, then you don't do any of these things if you don't want. But for the believer, this is what you are supposed to be doing. This is the discipline.
These are Jesus's words.
These are Jesus's words. Okay. So he says the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? In other words, the things we teach our kids, these little songs in churches. Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see.
Uh-huh.
Why do we say that?
I've never heard that one.
Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see. For the Father up above is looking down in love. Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see. We're teaching our kids, don't look at things you don't need to be looking at. If there's a naked body, turn your eyes from it.
I got to say, that song's a little tiny bit terrifying.
Yes. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money.
Huh. Yeah.
In other words, if money becomes your God, then that's what you will focus on.
Sure.
You will become the Bezos of your world.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
If God is more important, then you'll become the Billy Graham of your world, or you become the monk or the priest or
and everybody lives a Billy
family
Graham.
Man. Yeah.
Billy Graham's just that guy.
Yeah, because he was the same all the time. And he went around and he just told people about Jesus. That's what he did. All right, listen to this. I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? And here's that little statement. Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? And which of you, being anxious, can add a single hour to his span of life? Can you, with your anxiety, make your life longer? And why are you anxious about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin, yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? Notice he says, O you of little faith.
Yeah.
If you were O you of big faith, you would know that all of the things that he just described are things that God gives you.
Yeah.
And you know it.
Yeah, you'd already know.
So you don't worry about those things. For those who suffer from anxiety, if we do the words that Jesus Christ put into this world, you could learn and exercise an anxiousless life. You can do it because you are totally sold out, knowing that God is the provider of all things.
Yeah.
So if he clothes the grass, the fields with grass, and if he feeds the birds, how much more value are you to him? The end. All right. Therefore, do not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the Gentiles seek after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them all. So now he's saying that God knows that you need it. He made you.
Yeah, he's not. And he's not unaware of your situation as a human.
Seek first the kingdom of God and God's righteousness, his righteousness, and then all of these things that you've been worrying about will be added to you. In other words, we're a conduit. Like I said, having faith in God, knowing that all things come from him, we don't have to worry about those things. We know that we're going to receive them because he knows that we need them. That's what an intimate relationship with God is for us. I have a Fight Club t-shirt that's 30 years old.
That's pretty cool.
It's my favorite shirt. I love that. I'm sure my wife wants me to throw it away, but I wear it anyway.
Comfy.
I mean, it's just, it's bad.
Yeah.
But it's so comfortable. Yeah, it's
they
so
get
comfortable.
That way, yeah.
They do. Like, you can't even feel the fabric anymore. It's like putting on air.
Nice.
So then he says, therefore, do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble.
Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. That's fun.
In other words, don't worry about tomorrow. Today's got,
you've got enough to worry about today. You've got stuff to do today. Just let's get that done.
That's right. So we'll wrap up here. This is where we're going to wrap up. We're going to finish this off. Jesus says, judge not that you be not judged. In other words, don't judge others so that you won't be judged in the same way. For with the judgment that you pronounce, you will also be judged back. And with the measure you use and you measure others, the same will be measured unto you. That's why I really keep my bar low, bro. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own?
Yeah.
Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye when there is a log in your own eye? Hypocrite. Take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Do not give dogs what is holy, and do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you. In other words, know your room. Know the room.
Yeah.
Read your room.
Read the room.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, if the world operated according to the words that Jesus actually taught, you would have marriages that would stay together and families that would be strong. You would have people who are in need that would be able to have things given to them so that they would not be in want. You would have a lot less scandal, tragedy, war, destruction, death. If you actually followed the words of Jesus, these things would come to fruition in the world, and it starts with the believer. Every believer that claims to be a disciple of his needs to read Matthew 6 through 7 and start putting them into practice. This is a discipline that you do. I'm not saying this to make people feel guilty.
Yeah.
I'm telling you that there is a life that is more abundant than you could have ever imagined, and it starts with you, and it starts with me. And the world could be the way that he envisioned it and would be if people would actually put it into practice. But you're always going to have people that are ready to hurt you.
Yeah.
Yes, you are. But that he didn't talk about that, did he? He didn't tell you to retaliate. That's the intimacy of God.
Yeah, to perpetuate that.
Yeah. So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them.
Was the golden rule.
Exactly. Good job.
It is a good rule.
Ask and it will be given to you, and seek and you will find, and knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks it will be opened. That is something that Jesus said that would actually happen. Ask and you will receive, seek and you shall find, and knock and the door will be open. Some people might ask, well, if I ask for a yacht, okay. He's talking about spiritual things right here. He's telling you about your intimacy with God and about your life and the things that he wants you to know that he's revealing to you. Ask him, seek him, and then search out and knock on that door try to find him in any way and he will reward you. That's what he's saying. You can have this intimate relationship with me if you want it. You can have it. That's what he's saying. Which one of you, if his son asks him for bread, will give him a stone? So if he asks for a fish, will you give him a snake? If you then, who are evil, if you're not holy, but God's holy, and you yet you know how to give good gifts to your own children, how much more do you think the Father who is in heaven can give good things to those who ask him? See that? That's the intimacy of it. We, as parents, love our children. If my son come up and says, "Give Dad, can I have some bread?" I'm not going to go out to the driveway and grab my handful of rocks. If he comes out and says, "Dad, can I have some of your fish?" I'm not going to go look for a snake and be like, "Here, eat a snake instead." I'm going to be like, "Yeah, I have my fish, and here, eat my bread." Of course, son. And I am not holy. I'm not like God. I'm just a man. How much more will my Father in heaven give to those who ask him?
It would be incredible if everybody treated each other that way. It really would. I know it seems absurd and probably so not really, but it would be a better world.
This is my call to arms to all believers that are listening to this podcast. I don't care what your eschatology is. I don't care whether you're a Calvinist or you're an Arminian. I don't care what you are. My call to arms, it's not a battle. It's not the kind of battle that most people think, like a call to arms, like, hey, let's get our guns and go shooting. This is a call to putting this thing that you believe into practice and to exercise the discipline in which that you've been given. The things that Sarita taught us about the fruit of the Spirit, that's what is within you. The fruit of the Spirit is exercised. Those exercises are in the things that Jesus taught in the Sermon on the Mount. That's how we get there. That's how we get there. And so when people say, but Rick, pacifism, ugh. I hear it all the time. Ugh, pacifism.
I love that's my favorite response. Ugh. Pacifism, ugh. That's great. I love that. I hope people literally
But Rick,
do
if
that.
We didn't defend our nation, then everybody would take it from us. Rick, if we didn't go to war, then everybody else would be in hell. I'm sorry, folks, but the nation that you love so much has been tearing itself apart for quite some time now. And the world that you watch on a global scale that are bombing each other and taking each other's resources, that are exercising those things that you so want, that's why the world is in the shape that it's in. The world doesn't have to be in this shape. You have to learn how to give it to God and let that intimate relationship you have with God be able to trust him. Oh, but Rick, if you do that, the atheists and the scientists are going to take over. Folks, the atheists and the scientists are living right next door to you and working and doing the things that they're doing amazing things. They're doing amazing things. Let's remember that. Some of the things that we have brought to our world because of these brilliant men have been a benefit to our society. We are living better now than we ever have in all of history. Andy, you've said it yourself. But if you think that you're going to control it with a gun, if you think you're going to control it by swaying people's opinion or beating them down or telling them you're going to destroy them or whatever it might be, you've completely missed the boat. And that's not the world that Jesus described. Jesus described our world, and we're in this world, and we have him. So live by your faith. And if you don't know how to do that, then go into your closet in a secret place and ask him, because he sees you in secret. The end. Don't do it before men. It's not necessary. Don't look for any kind of slap on the back. That's not what it's about. It's about your relationship with him, and you can have it, but it requires effort on your part. That's why you are a discipline. You are a disciple, because it takes work. That's the work of the believer. And that's all I got to say about that. Andy, this was good, man. Thanks for listening.
No, thank you, man.
Yep. You ready to go out and start blowing a trumpet and everybody look at you?
I do that every evening. Stand on the roof of the studio. Play very badly and loud, yes. Though. And loud.
Yeah.
That's the important part.
Yeah. Anyway, well, to all my listeners out there that don't know how to do this or are upset with me, I'm just going to have to let you. I'm drawing my line in the sand. This is the work of the believer. Being a keyboard warrior on Facebook and trying to destroy people or make fun of them or be mean to them, I'm sorry, but you're not turning the other cheek. You're acting like a jerk is what you're being. And trying to be humble and to love one another to the best of your ability. That's where it's at. And not to have the upper hand, be subservient to others. Defend yourself, yes, but don't go on the offensive and try to take others' lives. And if you see somebody and you think they're attractive, take a minute and stop and think of your Heavenly Father instead of thinking about your own sexual gratification. That's the idea here. And it's much easier than, it's easier said than done, but that's the point. That's the discipline of the believer. So I hope that you'll take this advice and you'll do that. That's all I got to say about that. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Frank.
Guys, we will talk to you guys again next time on the Burrows of Berea. Peace out. I wish I had a trumpet.
We need Carter.
That's, oh, wow, that was terrible.
That was an elephant. It was a tiny elephant.
That was me blowing on a blade of grass. That's what it sounded like.
All right.
Hey, guys, this is Rick from the Burrows of Berea. A lot of people have been asking us, hey, what is this Patreon thing? Our old Patreon ad didn't work very well. So here you go, guys. Go to www.patreon. That is patreon.com. Let me do that again. patreon.com/theburrowsofberea. If you go to the Patreon page, you will find that we have different levels that you can give at. We have a $3 level, a $5 level. We've got a $10 level and a $20 level. I thought about putting a $1,000 level there, but you never know how that's going to work out, right, Andy? That's right. So go to www.patreon.com/theburrowsofberea and give us all of your money.
even a little bit will be fine.
Yeah. And that $5,000 wouldn't hurt my
either. No, it would hurt nobody.
Thanks, guys.
There's this bakery at the top of Spartanburg Highway on the left before the Angles, this Mexican bakery. And it is a gem, and I don't take advantage of it enough.
Yeah.
I was trying to find a quick – actually, it was breakfast. I was trying to find a quick breakfast, and I kind of drove past a couple of places thinking about other stuff I needed to do. And so I was up there, and I just, like, went in there, and they had sandwiches hot, you know, like – and they have all these crazy breads and stuff. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And it was like a $6 sandwich that I split and ate half of, and it's delicious. And then I reheated the other half, and that was delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So here's some Mexican bakeries. So
cool.
Give one a shot.
You ready?
Yep. I'm going to make a little noise, but
don't worry about it.
Crinkling my treat bag.